Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Alexis Brooks, who is the author of Conscious Musings, Contemplations to Transform Life and Realize Potential. Alexis is a journalist, researcher, and writer, and she's done a lot of exploration of the metaphysical. And she also hosts a radio program, Conscious Inquiry with Alexis Brooks. Thanks, Alexis, for joining us.
Well, thank you, Susan. It's my pleasure.
So, would you like to give our listeners a little bit of information about how you were guided to write Conscious Musings?
Well, sure. You know, and I'm asked that question a lot, Susan, and I'm always trying to think of a very succinct answer, but I don't know that it was, I don't think it was an acute event per se, but rather an accumulation of knowledge and of interest, and I'll tell you, of urgency. I really feel that the reason that I wrote it at this time is, you know, being sort of an experiential person as I am and looking around from an exoteric as well as an esoteric standpoint, there's a lot of discord going on the planet right now, both exoterically, and I think it may be mirrored esoterically with people feeling a bit out of sorts. Something is off kilter. And so I wanted to really kind of express that in the book in several different ways. First and foremost, the first section of the book is really taking a look at human behavior and habits, what we have typically expressed as personality, and the possibility that we have forfeited a lot of that inner power that I believe we've all been endowed with. And I'm sure we'll get more into the nuts and bolts of the book, but that was really the impetus, really looking at an urgency of now for taking a look at who we are, what's happening, both spiritually as well as physically, and where we're going. And really kind of I wanted this book to be a bit of a guide to transformation through contemplation.
And one of the areas that you're interested in has to do with synchronicity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think synchronicity, we'll get into that in a minute, but I think the synchronicities can be guideposts along your path.
Absolutely.
To indicate that you're on the right path and you haven't deviated off. 'Cause it is kind of difficult sometimes to know exactly which way to go. Even those of us who are extremely intuitive, we often just wonder, are we actually doing what we're supposed to do? Because you probably realize that a lot of us know things we're going to be doing 10, 20 years in the future, and when we try to do them prematurely, mm-hmm. things don't work out. And mm-hmm. so it can be very confusing.
It certainly can, yeah. And, you know, you're talking about one of my favorite subjects on the planet, Susan, and that's synchronicity. You and I
right.
share that in common.
Right.
But, yes, I think that synchronicity to me has always been an extraordinary, although anomalous, language. I call it a language of the universe. I think, again, keeping our focus on now and what's happening right now, excuse me, you think about all of the means by which, all the channels by which we're getting messages externally, primarily through technology. We are being bombarded with information, and so the ability to discern and distill becomes even more of a challenge right now. So to me, synchronicity, if we choose, and I believe it's up to each individual to choose that it's a very real phenomenon, that synchronicity can become a conduit or a channel by which we can use to discern and distill. So it's a very important thing. It's a very subtle art. And I think, again, it's up to the individual. You know, there synchronicities happen to everyone, and I tell people, don't look for synchronicity. I have clients that I counsel about developing intuition along with synchronicity, and I had one client say to me, well, Alexis, I'm looking for synchronicity. And I said, you cannot look for it. You have to become attuned, aware, and recognize. And I think once you do, you'll find more of them happen in your life. And, in fact, it can become a guidepost. Although, I'll tell you, synchronicity is one of those, what would I call it? It's an anomalous thing, and because it's so subtle, and because we're talking about understanding a language, perhaps from the universe or perhaps from our higher self, it doesn't operate the same way we do. And so many times we're using a very linear thought process to understand, to make decisions, which way should we go, left or right. But synchronicity doesn't necessarily speak back in that same language. So we really have to learn the art of that language. And that can be a challenge, but it can be exciting as well.
I want to tell you a little story that I guess demonstrates a principle that a lot of times you just have to ask for a sign.
Yes.
And so I had a friend who was a doctor ask me to borrow money, and I noticed that she didn't seem to work a lot, and she seemed to waste a lot of money, so I didn't know whether I should lend her the money. So I asked the universe for a sign, and I was watching Saturday Night Live, and somebody on Saturday Night Live held up a literal sign, you know, one of those cardboard signs saying, mm-hmm. I have spent all my money, give me some of yours. So I called her up and told her I couldn't give her the loan.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't that funny? And that's how it happens. I think that's amazing. Oh, you know, and here's the other thing, Susan. Synchronicities, we think of, you know, synchronicity as very serious. You know, it has implicit meaning, and it speaks with one tone. But I don't think that's the case. I think it can be a trickster at times. It can be humorous. It can be life-changing. You know, so it is a little bit of a... I call it an art to be able to understand what synchronicity is. You know, it could be something so simple as, you know, not that your example was a simple one necessarily, or it was somewhat lighthearted. And it can be, oh gosh, you know, something that could save your life. I'll tell you a story if I may. And
sure.
This is a story that I interviewed a woman by the name of Anne McQuaid, who wrote the book Everyday Oracle. She's a fantastic individual, and her book is primarily about synchronistic signs that can come in seeing images in clouds, etc. But she tells a story about a surgeon who, for whatever reason, really was one to sort of pay attention to those subtle signs. And one particular day, he was driving en route to the hospital to perform a surgery. And on the way to the hospital, his eyes happened to glance to the side. He was driving, and he noticed, and this is a little bit gruesome, but he noticed there was a roadkill. There was a rabbit, I guess, that was run over, and birds were feeding on its carcass. And he took notice of that. Well, he goes into the hospital to prepare for surgery. He was to perform surgery on a male patient. And as he's getting into prep, and he's watching the patient being rolled in, the patient's wife comes up to the patient and kisses her husband goodbye, and not goodbye, but see, what she said is, "See you later, bunny." That was her nickname for him.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, immediately, the physician, recalling the experience of seeing this rabbit dead on the road, he made the intuitive decision, "I'm not performing this surgery."
Right.
Well, what ends up happening, about an hour later, the man that he was to be operating on had a heart attack.
Right.
And he reasoned that if they were in the midst of surgery at the time of this heart attack, he would have not survived.
Right.
So
yeah.
This is, in contrast, what synchronicity, now this all involves both synchronicity and intuition, but it also goes to show you how synchronicity can literally save a life if you are attuned and are willing to act on the signals.
Yeah, that's very true. I think that's why I call them signposts along the way.
Absolutely.
If you have a synchronicity, it can be a very good indicator that you're on the right path, or you're doing the right thing, or you followed the right fork in the road.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like with my sign example, sometimes you just have to ask. I mean, it's a real crazy concept, but just asking for something is often all you need to do, and it's provided in a pretty direct and humorous way.
It certainly can be. I think asking is always there. It's a very simple thing to do, but I also think that once you become attuned to synchronicities, remember, if this is the language of the universe, it not only understands words, but it understands your heart. And oftentimes, the heart is speaking before you can utter the word. So in many cases, for me, synchronicities will happen without a request, although they can happen with a request. That's how powerful it is. And it really kind of calls into question how inextricably linked we are to this continuum of consciousness we call God, we call the universe.
So, in your excuse me, in your book, you were you mentioned that the reality that we're in is a construct, and I want to go over into that a little bit more because I think what's happening around us is showing us that our reality, time and space, is a construct because of things not quite right within the framework that we're used to, things that are shifting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, that's a very holographic principle. That's a big subject, and where I don't want to speak out of school because I'm not a scientist. I found the model, or I find the model, the holographic model, which is really a quantum model, very intriguing. You know, some of these concepts that I came stumbled upon years ago, somehow, although they seemed illogical to the left brain, they resonated with me on an inner level. And I think that's what happens with people. There's an aha moment, an epiphany that you have. And so when that idea, that reality is perhaps, or at least the physical reality that we're traversing on a daily basis, may in fact be somewhat of a construct, not the underbelly of reality, but an epidermis layer of it, I said to myself, something about this makes sense. For whatever it's worth, you know, the work of the late Michael Talbot, who wrote the book, a seminal work, The Holographic Universe, goes into intricate detail, and he really delineates the science behind making the case for the idea that reality is malleable, it's plastic. And again, when I say reality, I'm speaking of the third dimension of reality. I believe that there may be infinite layers of reality. And the human mind or brain, as it were, does not have the ability to pick up but a little bit of that. But every once in a while, we get a bigger purview. And I think synchronicity, intuition, and other phenomena that happens to us are really those bleed-throughs that show us that reality is quite plastic and quite malleable. So, yes, you know, can I prove that empirically? No. But I think it's one of these things that we as individuals will have to know experientially. We've seen indications of that. I mean, look at the movie The Matrix, and I know that's, you know, with all of its Hollywood accoutrements, that movie struck so many people, Susan, that I think knew, even though they did a fantastic job with the eye candy and it was exciting, there was an underlying message that people resonated with. And to this day, especially in the alternative world, people are speaking about, using especially the original Matrix movie as not just a metaphor, but perhaps a literal explanation for how much of a construct this reality is.
I've been doing Temple of Health radio show for about 17 years, and I remember interviewing Michael Talbot on the Holographic Universe. And when I read that book, a lot of pieces fell into place for me. Essentially, what he's describing is a holographic, like a video, you know, it's not just a holograph like we saw in Star Wars. This is a holographic videotape, which he is very adept at showing how that works for us. And certainly, once you understand that may be the construct that we're living within, all of the phenomena that, much of which you mentioned in your book, but the phenomena that are considered, you know, to be beyond what we logically understand are understood. It fits in very well.
It certainly does. It certainly does. There's so many examples that you can look at that might intimate that there is literally, it's interesting that you mentioned a tape recorder, that reality is some sort of a feedback loop. You know, it's complex, and yet, again, coming back to the now and the urgency for me in writing this book is that I think people are starting to have more phenomenological experiences that are showing them that reality is very bendable, and you know, think of all of the experiences people are having, out-of-body experiences. They're having some near-death experiences. I am hearing, Susan, an incredible amount of people who are seeing what are called shadow people. Are you familiar with that term?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen them.
Have you really? Well, you know.
Oh, yeah, and felt them.
Yeah.
Felt them on the floor, like something swirling by, you know,
mm-hmm.
something. We've asked about what that is, and
yeah.
what we've been told is it's literally a world right next to ours.
That's right.
They're not aware of us, and we're not aware of them, except in these certain circumstances. And we got a message it was actually last week, that the next exploration will not be outer space, you know, where we go and colonize outer space. It will actually involve these parallel worlds
mm-hmm.
where we will be able to understand what they are and even visit them.
Right, right. Well, you know, there is a lot of speculation about what these anomalous creatures that are called shadow people are. I've done a good bit of work with a mutual colleague of ours, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and recently interviewed her about this phenomenon. I wanted to revisit it. I've covered it before in my work, but wanted to revisit it because I'm finding, you know, in my travels, I'm talking to the average layperson who will invariably tell me a story or two of phenomena, much
mm-hmm.
of which include this shadow person phenomenon. All people
right.
from all walks of life, all religious or non-religious
mm-hmm.
backgrounds.
Right.
So clearly there is something going on here. Now, with Rosemary's work, and she spent, I don't know, maybe 11 years on this subject alone, her contention is that this realm or these entities may come from what are referred to as the jinn, which is a term that's used in Middle Eastern culture, in the Islamic culture,
mm-hmm.
you know, this sort of entity that is very much alive and living in this parallel dimension. And, you know, there may be a little bit more of a malevolent motivation based on the way she's talking about it. We don't know. I don't know that it really matters what they are and what they want, as much as it's showing unequivocally, proving that reality, this reality, is indeed a construct that is interpenetrating
mm-hmm.
many, many others. Now, again, coming back to this now time, Susan, I really feel like so many others that we are going through what I call the proverbial shift. I don't know why it's now. You know, obviously the Mayans and the Hopis have, you know, sort of calculated this time in history. But for whatever reason, we're here to experience it. And that now, it seems to be denoting more of these experiences of phenomena. The veil seems to be thinning.
Yeah.
And as much as conventional science still would love to poo-poo it, people are still having the experiences nonetheless. And they're looking for resources to get some sort of explanation. I try to veer people away from looking for an absolute, this is what it is, and that's it, because it could mean a
mm-hmm.
lot of things. You know, perhaps the shadows that we're seeing are some aspect of ourselves that are residing in these parallel realities. So there's a cornucopia of possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, again, the focus should be on, this is real, and let's explore. And that's really part of what I wanted to convey in the section of the book where I get into the magic, mystery, and metaphysics of potentiality, where I cover a range of phenomena, experiences. And rather than brush them off and say, well, that was a coincidence, or look for a bucket to put it in that you're familiar with, explore and investigate. Because I think that what it's reality is showing us, that if it's so much more than we have thought it to be, then we are much more as well. Hence the reason why we're continuing to have these experiences.
Yeah, and we've been also told that the nature of this reality is shifting. In other words, there are, I guess, well, this is exactly what was said, that space and time are two sides of the same coin,
mm-hmm.
and that there is an actual change in the nature of space-time that is occurring as we go through this shift. And I think you've probably experienced, as have many of our listeners, that the weeks just seems to be flying past.
Absolutely.
And it's not just because I'm almost 60. It's the 20-year-olds that work for me as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's all of us. I mean, yes, my week may be going a little bit faster than the 20-year-old week, but time is changing in a very profound way. And because space and time are this opposite sides of the same coin, that means space is changing as well.
I have no doubt about that. Yeah.
So we just have to know we're in a shift.
Mm-hmm. This is a very interesting subject to me. As a matter of fact, I had just put out my News and Muse, Higher Journeys newsletter a few days ago, and I began, introed the newsletter with talking about the experience of the acceleration of time. I could not agree more. I think that is happening. We used to say the older you get, the quicker time flies. I don't think that's the case anymore. I agree with you. I think lots of people are commenting on, not only time accelerating, but missing time. I'm hearing more stories of people who are, I don't know, is it that they're just getting so fully immersed in experience that they lose the concept of time. You know, this is an interesting subject that I actually would like to explore more from a research standpoint. But, you know, when you think of time, this has always been a subject that's intrigued me. And the idea that time is not linear, but in fact simultaneous, that indeed there may be multiple time lines, all of these things really kind of further underscore, corroborate how plastic reality is. It's not that time is an absolute thing, but rather our consciousness, you know, having the experience of time. And what could be happening right now, Susan, is that because people, their consciousness is raising, their interpretation of time is different, including the acceleration of time. So that is, it's a mind bender. You know, I have to tell you that when I was younger, and I've been kind of delving into these subjects really most of my life. I grew up in a family that was very, very intrigued by big questions like what we're having. And so I was sort of indoctrinated into that whole scene at an early age. And yet I kind of took off on a tangent, became a voracious reader in these subjects, really just kind of felt a resonance with all of these things. And I remember, I can never remember the book that I was reading at the time. It may have been the Cest material, which I think happens to be one of the most biggest body of work in metaphysics there may be. But I remember coming to the concept of time not being an absolute, but simultaneous or not real at all. And I remember coming to my mother saying, "Mom, listen to this." And I read whatever the passage was that really gave a lucid explanation that time may be not what we think it is. And I remember her looking at me saying, "All right, I think you're now over my head. I don't get that."
Right.
And yet I did. Something about it made sense.
Well, so, Seth had some of the best work on parallel worlds.
Oh, yes.
He really did. There was a lot of different teachings on that. I did want to mention the Looking Glass Project. Have you done any reading about that, the military project?
I'm somewhat familiar with it, but I'm not learned enough about it to really talk about it. But please, go right into it. I'd love to hear what you have to say.
I was in the military. I was in the Air Force for 13 years, and I have a number of military contacts. So I know for a fact that this is a real project. And basically, the Looking Glass Project was extraterrestrial technology that was used to explore timelines.
Uh-huh.
And the point, you should go research it. It's absolutely fascinating. Uh-huh. But the thing that I wanted to mention here was that the various timelines that we were on, you know, there was one timeline where we've already had a nuclear war, you know, that was pretty devastating. That timeline we're on has not had a nuclear war, but did, say, have 9/11. So the timelines all converged on December 21st, 2012.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's what's interesting, is that all of these timelines converged at that point, because that is a reset point. And you mention it in your book as well, but that's a reset point for the timelines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is what is interesting about that date.
Again, we're talking about the multidimensionality of reality, which includes space and time. Now, I have heard of the Looking Glass Project. I have not looked into it intently. But if the crux of that material is about the idea of multiple timelines, I am somewhat familiar with that. And I do, again, find that intriguing and have a sense that may very well be the case. Perhaps we, as individuals, are traversing these timelines constantly. And you know, you connect all of that back, Susan, with the phenomena that's happening in our lives, including the events that are happening in our lives. And you wonder if there's a connection, that they're bleeding through one another. You know, and this brings, well, I don't want to get too complex because, I'll be speaking out of school, but somewhere in there, wave-particle duality comes to mind, the quantum reality and the interpenetration of wave and particle and timelines. Are they all somehow connected or part of a very fundamental tenet of reality? I don't know. I think it's interesting. But yes, I have heard of the concept of multiple timelines. You know, another colleague of ours, Cynthia Sue Larson, who's been a dear friend of mine for probably a dozen or more years, talks about well-known individuals who have died again. Now, I know this is going to be a bit mind-twisting, maybe or maybe not, to your audience, but she talks about several well-known figures in our history who she swears, and other people have sworn, had already heard that they died, but they didn't. And then they died. Mandela is a key example of that. Now, that's a tough one even for me to try to understand, certainly from a logical standpoint, you can't. And yet, it seems to be occurring. I recall figures, you know, these are typically public figures that you'll hear about, I swear I heard that person died already. Now, what's happening there?
Yeah.
But then they just died. It's fascinating.
Well,
and, you know.
Yeah, that could be two parallel worlds just kind of getting out of sync, you know, because there might be a day off.
Exactly.
It is very, well, this is evidently, if our information is correct from last week, this is the next area that we're going to be studying. I mean, most people on the Earth would say, no, we're going to colonize Mars or we're going to, you know, try to go outside the solar system. But no, this is the next thing up, is these parallel worlds.
Yeah.
And it would seem that we're much more involved with that than we are with interstellar travel. I mean, I haven't, you know, the NASA program isn't even working anymore, you know, so it would seem that we're headed in a different direction. You also mentioned Bruce Goldberg in your book, and I've interviewed him many times. I think Bruce was the one that came up with the idea that there's going to be shifts in time, and let me give you the example I think he used, and then I want to tell a story about a friend of mine and what happened to them, because I think this is going to happen more and more. He says there's going to be these bubbles of time that are time distortion. So say you go to Walmart and you park way out in the back of the parking lot because you want to walk, get some exercise. And as you go into the store and there's only just a few cars there just because it's early, and then you come out of the store and the entire parking lot is packed. In other words, you skip time.
Yes.
He says that will happen. And you got to pick up on it from external clues.
I think
one
it
of
has
my friends, yeah, I think it is happening. One of my friends travels to our meditation group from 2 hours away, and they were going back home, and you know, they know the exits. You know, they're a major highway, and there's a certain number of exits because they live in near Athens, Georgia. And what happened was that all of a sudden they skipped about four exits, and they were even beyond where they should have gotten off. And it happened to both of them simultaneously, husband and wife.
I mean,
that is so strange.
It's strange, and yet again, Susan, I think it's indicative of the fact that this veil, this sort of veneer that has separated us in the 3D physical world with everything else, is indeed thinning. And more people, including myself, are having experiences like this. I'll tell you one of mine. This doesn't happen too often. This is what our friend Cynthia Sue Larson calls reality shifts. I was driving, speaking of exits, I was getting off at my exit right near my home, of which I've traveled thousands of times. I'm actually in the home that I grew up in, so I've been here for many, many years. And I'm a pretty aware person, so I'm pretty aware of my surroundings. I love to look at nature. I love to look at trees and whatever, and just take notice of my surroundings. Well, on this particular day, I'm getting off the highway, and I look to my right, and I see this tree. That was just so extraordinary. And it was big, huge, and I could swear that tree was not there before. Well, do you know that when I went back several days later, I was getting off the highway, taking the same route, the tree wasn't there. The tree
was my
not
goodness.
There.
You drove home in a parallel world.
Possibly. Now, it's
well,
crazy.
Well, that's what they say. I mean, they say that things are almost the same, but not quite.
Yeah, yeah.
And that we populate these parallel worlds.
That we populate these parallel worlds. And
yeah, but we might not be doing exactly what we're doing now.
Mm-hmm. This phenomenon is also reported in out-of-body experiences, that when we travel, those that have had what we call astral experiences, that the world that we're inhabiting out of body, so to speak, is almost identical to the physical world, but not quite. Let's say you travel out of body and you notice the room that you're in, but rather than the walls being blue, they're green. Or maybe there's a chair that's not there. So again, all of these experiences of which, and by the way, out-of-body experiences is perhaps one of the most common paranormal experiences that man has had. You know, this too is indicative of, you know, we're traversing these realms constantly in the sleep state, in the waking state, at heightened states of emotion. And we can get into what triggers these sorts of things, what triggers these reality shifts. Some of them are they seem very arbitrary and without warning. Others can be triggered by heavy emotional states, whether it's fear or anger. I think anger can be a trigger for, or, you know, fear in particular. You know, being able to, a mother who is seeing her child, God forbid, run over by a car or pinned underneath a car and is able to lift the car, it defies everything. But, you know, in that case, her reality has shifted. And in that reality, that parallel world, she's able to do things that she normally wouldn't be able to do.
Right.
So there's intimations of this all over the place. And I do think, I keep coming back to the now. Yes, I think this is a worthy area of exploration. Although I do think, you know, you talk about inner exploration or the exploration of parallel worlds, I think that's happening now. But I also think that the, you know, space travel, that will continue as well, or exploration of the stars and planets. I think it's all happening now. Just wish it were more forthcoming in our mainstream. Still poo-pooed. It's still, you know, considered woo-woo topics. And these are perhaps the most important subjects for our evolution as human and spiritual beings.
Well, it makes sense that they are off limits because if we really did understand the nature of who we are, we wouldn't be able to be controlled and manipulated to quite the extent that the powers that be are doing that. So
that doesn't work, right? That's not a good formula.
Yeah.
God forbid you let the people know what's really going on, and then we've lost control. I absolutely agree with you.
I noticed that Foster Gamble is one of the people in the back of your book writing a very nice little blog for the book. And Foster is one of the best people to have come forth with this agenda in his movie Thrive. So if people haven't seen that, they ought to.
Absolutely. In fact, I think Foster and Kimberly both did an extraordinary job on, you know, covering a subject like what we call the C word, conspiracy, but in a very intelligent, even academic, and, you know, not just about, the movie was not just about putting out, here's what's been going on, and here's how you've been screwed most of your life.
Right,
but provide solutions and context for not only what we have been going through, but scientific breakthroughs. I thought that they just did a phenomenal job, and I recommend that to everyone that I come across that is inquisitive about these things. Because, again, I think the layperson, Susan, is starting to realize something's not right here. Something just does not seem right, and I need to find out what it is, and I'm not getting it from my normal channels, both figuratively and literally. And so, thank goodness, we have something that we call alternative media that now gives us places to go to try to reconcile this really quirkiness that's going on that I think has been heightened. You know, the craziness that's going on the surface level is being heightened, although interestingly, I was just talking to my husband last night about this. We're talking about all of the challenges that people are going through on every conceivable level, and including those that wish to keep the reins on society, the bad guys, if you will, right? But we reasoned, you know, if reality is multidimensional, and there is an underbelly or, you know, an ultimate purpose to life, I know this is going to sound a little controversial to some that do believe there are bad guys out there. Perhaps we're being pushed, we're being challenged, the ante is being upped on our control to push us until we finally get to the point where we realize that we are the power source ourselves, that we've got to stop relying on these external forces of authority called government, et cetera. And maybe they're upping the ante, unbeknownst to them, to get us to the point that we realize we don't need them. But then if we don't need them, then what do we rely on? That inner guide, that inner power. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah. I think that they are, well, I've never really bought into good versus evil.
Right.
I read a book a long time ago that was channeled material from Hilarion, and it's called, it came through a Canadian businessman. It's called Dark Robes, Dark Brothers, and it was about the relationship between the dark and the white brotherhood. And they gave an example in that book that I'll briefly go into. They said, you remember when people used to go to McDonald's and shoot everybody? It happened a couple of times, I think. They said that a demonic force from the dark side inhabits the shooter, and that you always know it's demonic because the shooter ends up shooting himself. But they say every single bullet wound is pre-planned and agreed upon at a higher level, and that everything is absolutely perfect because the demonic person is, or the demonic force is controlling the person. There's nobody, you know, the people that are supposed to live, the people that die are supposed to die, the people that get injured are supposed to be injured in exactly, you know, precision way. So the point is that when whatever happens, and even Stephen King goes into this in The Stand, you know, good and evil work together. They always work together. And that's what you just said, you know, these horrible, potentially evil conspiracy things are to make us wake up.
Yeah, it could
be. You know,
be.
Come on. I mean, how did Building 7 fall down, for God's sake?
Exactly.
You know? I mean,
exactly.
If you just want to accept whatever you're told and act like sheep that never question anything, even what's in front of your own face, you're going to get taken down the path. I mean, you are. That is. But you do need to wake up at some point and look at the logical and rational and scientific things that are happening in these things, and then make your mind up about what really happened.
Right.
And it's not just 9/11. It's the Malaysian Airlines. It's the week before the second Malaysian airline went down. Mother Mary came through one of the groups in our channeling session and said, "Nothing. Do not believe anything that you hear this week on TV
news. Something? Wow.
And then the second one happened. We had already known that the first one was you know, landed at Diego Garcia, you know. I mean, we already figured that one out. But the second one, I mean, we were given guidance that not to believe the story that was going to come out on the news.
Well, if that's the case and Mother Mary is giving those messages, it would seem she'd be giving them daily, because I don't believe anything you hear on the news. In fact, I heard somebody say, whenever you see a headline, and we can get into that, that's a big bone of contention for me, Susan, the headlines and what they're really trying to engineer. Now, I came from mainstream media, so I can give you a little insight scoop on what's really happening. But somebody said, whenever you see a headline, especially when it's persistent, and continuous, turn it 180 degrees, and that's the truth. Let's talk about the Ebola, quote-unquote Ebola crisis, you know, and I think there are a lot of people right now, none of us fully know what's happening here, but I feel a very strong sense, Susan, that this quote-unquote crisis that we're being told exists and is growing and is a threat and all the things that come with it are not at all. Is it a false flag? I can't say. It might be. But I think that regardless of what it is, and moreover, its origins, it has been designed and proliferated in the media to do other things, i.e.
mm-hmm.
distract us from some of the more pertinent things that are going on, the sleight of hand that may be going on. You know, I'm here in the New England area, and I've been watching the headlines about the nurse from Maine who came back
mm-hmm.
from a trip to West Africa treating
mm-hmm.
Ebola patients. No symptoms whatsoever of Ebola, but they had decided in Maine that she would be quarantined. I believe initially it was voluntary. She would be quarantined
mm-hmm.
for 21 days. So
mm-hmm.
that brings to mind, without any symptoms, by the way, no symptoms
mm-hmm.
whatsoever, but that she needed to be monitored. Well, you know, the other day, she and her boyfriend in Maine decide to go for a bike ride. Breaking news,
mm-hmm.
a bike ride. Imagine
mm-hmm.
that. She was supposed to be quarantined in her home. They kept the focus on that story all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, okay, what are you really trying to tell us here or get us ready for? Are we talking about martial law? Are we talking
yeah.
about imposing mandatory quarantines or vaccines? I think that there, whenever you see a story that's this persistent,
mm-hmm.
and the Ebola debacle is one of those. You know, typically
yep.
headlines don't stay headlines that long. They have been dogged about keeping this subject in the
mm-hmm.
news. And I have a feeling they're doing so to accomplish several things, maybe none of which have to do with Ebola, but some of the plans that they have for humanity. So, yeah, I say never, never take, certainly don't take what the official story is at, as gospel. I think people still
right.
have a long way to go there. Unfortunately, we still, the masses are still taking those headlines and building their worldview around them. That's a very dangerous thing. So we've
yeah,
got to rely on the inner news channel, as far as I'm concerned.
There was something very disturbing to me that occurred after that bombing at the Boston Marathon,
mm-hmm.
That the police were randomly entering homes with no warrants and no, you know, I mean, just really abusing that portion of the, you know, their power. And
yeah.
I don't think a lot of people were real aware to the extent that that happened. But
I was right in the middle of it. I was right in the middle of it. They didn't storm our
homes,
know. But there was a shutdown of, and now I live in Lexington, Massachusetts, and there was a shutdown
right.
of about a 20-25 mile radius.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was, it was, I don't know whether they considered a mandatory stay in your home, you know, order or a voluntary one, but they were urging.
Yeah, that was very, very disturbing
yeah.
to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think that that was all an exercise.
We know the thing about what we now call in alternative media false flags. And again, I try
right.
to be very cautious about what I deem to be a false flag versus not. I think all of these events that play out are very questionable and have lots of holes in them that might lead us to that conclusion. But the thing
mm-hmm.
that I find, Susan, with a lot of these events, including the Boston Marathon, including the shooting that just happened in Washington State, including
mm-hmm.
9/11, et cetera, is these drills, supposed drills that take place, including Sandy Hook, these
mm-hmm.
drills that take place within hours or a day or so prior to the event playing out. Now, some
mm-hmm.
in the conspiracy movement contend that those drills are actually sort of signals to whomever that that the event is imminent and planned.
Well, and it's also a cover.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you couldn't have done 9/11 without the false flag, if you look at the details. I mean, I used to sit alert with the military. I was in the Air Force. So, you know, I know that it's absolutely insane to think that our alert system was down.
Mm-hmm.
And it was. But it was down because of the false flag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, they were all diverted somewhere else to do this false flag operation. So my contention is, without the false flag, you actually couldn't put everything in place, because we do have, like, protective systems in place.
Mm-hmm.
You have
Absolutely.
To take them out of place to have certain things happen.
Right.
So
well,
if you understand the workings of it, then you understand why the false flag has to be there.
Yeah. Well, the same goes when you speak of the Malaysian airline incidents, the first one being MH370, same
mm-hmm.
thing. There are systems that are built in. It said that Rolls-Royce, who makes the engines
right.
for the Boeing, that they have ping systems. They know no matter where it is, whether it's crashed or just goes missing, that they're immediately alerted to, you know, where this craft is. So here we go again. That was, I interviewed Sean David Morton on MH370. Before 17 happened. Really like to get a hold of him on 17. And of course, he's very controversial, but the whole idea of the plane being diverted to Diego Garcia, you know, the fact that there were, I believe, scientists on this flight that were in possession of patents for, you know, I'm not really too up on the specifics, but there were a whole litany of reasons why this plane had to go missing. But I will tell you something. To bring this back, because we've kind of taken it 180 degrees,
I think
these things are all connected. I think they're all important. From the spiritual and the light to the evil and the dark, they're all necessary to know. But going back to MH370, Susan, something before I got into the more conspiratorial possibilities of this flight, we talk about timelines and parallel dimensions and, being lost in time. I have to tell you, the notion in the early days of this plane going missing, the notion or the possibility that this plane went into some sort of a time slip did cross my mind. I think it's imperative to be able to explore all possibilities. Could it be some semblance of both? What's going on with that? I remember reading a thread on one of the alternative sites that had a group of psychic mediums that were trying to glean information in the very early days of 370 going missing, and what they were picking up on, and they were very responsible about how they covered this, but they were trying to channel information to figure out where this plane was, and several of them were getting the sense that this plane literally went into a state of, I think one of them described a boom or a lightning bolt in the sky, in the plane, and she could see the people on the plane holding their ears because it was so loud. And all of a sudden, the plane ended up on an island somewhere back in the time of 1950 something. You know, again,
the information we got was very specific because we checked every day. We got that the plane landed on an island, and that people were alive for 3 days, and then they weren't.
Somewhat similar.
That's the information we got. I will say this, that the in almost every case of a plane going missing in time, that has been around a certain confluence of ley lines, the Bermuda Triangle, and then there's one on the opposite side of the Earth that is similar. But there are certain areas where there's no doubt. And in fact, one of the pilots actually lived to tell about what the vortex looked like, because it was a vortex. His plane flew into a vortex, literally swirling. He drew a picture of it. And he did get out of it. But and then there was the time that the airline went into it for 10 minutes and then came out, the American airline, and everybody who all their watches had lost 10 minutes while they were in it. So we know that that exists, and I actually had an interesting thing happen. I lived in a condominium in Ohio, and one of my neighbors in the condominium, her husband was a pilot who had gotten his plane disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle, and we were talking about it. She looked at me. She says, "He's not dead. I'd feel it if he was dead. He just is somewhere else." You know, I mean, it's so weird to run into people whose significant others have disappeared into this, but I believe her. I mean, I think that she would know if he was dead, and she says he's not dead. He's just not here.
I think the people that are, especially with regard to the MH370 and the fact that they have been so adamant, we notice we're not hearing about it now because something else has taken over the headline. So there is undoubtedly something going on there, but I think many of them know, maybe even on an intuitive level, that, or even at the time, now we're maybe these passengers are gone at this point, but they knew that the story was just not true because they were
They didn't land in the ocean, right?
Yeah. you know, there are dreams and there are so many channels by which we get information, and we know when it's accurate.
Well, there was the data on the iPhone, too, that placed them right on the island. So, you know, unless that was somehow a leak that just wasn't true.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't see that, because that information came from a girlfriend of one of the IBM guys. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
I think we're going to hear something more about it. Something else is going to occur.
Well,
that. Yeah.
Certainly after we've left this dimension, we'll know exactly what happened, which is something that we can look forward to. I mean,
absolutely.
I, for one, would like to know.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour, Alexis. It's been absolutely delightful talking to you. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. I would love to, and thank you so much for the opportunity. Well, my home online is higherjourneys.com. That's higher, JOURNEYS.com. As you mentioned, I have my radio show, Conscious Inquiry, which is part of ConsciousLifeNews.com. The bi-monthly program, and we've been having some wonderful guests delving into all these fascinating areas of inquiry. Doing the book thing, it's been just an absolute pleasure and honor to speak with people like yourself to talk about these critical issues. But you can find most of my work, if not all of it, on higherjourneys.com. That will lead you to the other sites that I'm affiliated with.
Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
To have you back sometime. We've been talking with Alexis Brooks. Her book, Conscious Musings, Contemplations to Transform Life and Realize Potential. Please read it. It addresses many of the things that are happening right now and gives you exercises and information that is very important. Thanks so much, Alexis.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Join us next week for Dr. Cassius Camden Clay talking about targeted muscle testing or applied kinesiology, something you can use in everyday life. And then Lorraine Hurley will be speaking about detoxification on the 15th. And on the 22nd, we will be interviewing the author of The Alchemy of Self-Healing, a revolutionary 30-day plan to change how you relate to your body and health. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.